Have any of you seen the film Fist Fight starring Charlie Day and Ice Cube?
No.
What a
this is a film. This is a film which I will encourage everyone to watch. Like, okay, it's not admirable in every aspect. There's a plot line where it's a Jillian Bell plays a teacher, and she's waiting for school to end so she can like start a relationship with one of the students. Like, that's really yikes. But the main plot of the film, if you disregard that, it's just Ice Cube plays a history teacher who takes no nonsense, and Charlie Day plays Charlie Day as an English teacher. And Ice Cube challenges him to a fight in the parking lot after school, and things rapidly escalate from there. But the way you're on about the coffee break, it's like all of their jobs are up for review and they're trying to downsize the whole department. And Charlie Day has to, like, go to his review, go to his daughter's talent show, and be at the fight, all within the space of, like, an hour
or whatever.
So he's really pressed for time. And they're, like, they keep delaying him. They're like, oh, it'll be just 15 minutes. And he snaps, and he's like, right, screw this. And they go in, and they're just, it's like Dean Norris and some other dude. They're, like, swapping fishing stories, and Charlie Day loses the plot. And he's just like, if I ever come in here again, I'm gonna fuck you up. I'm gonna shove that halibut up your ass.
Oh my god.
Okay.
Isn't this the movie where his child's at, like, I've seen this gif or somewhere where, like, his child's at the talent show and she, like, raps this, like, really inappropriate song?
Yeah. I Don't Fuck With You by Big Sean.
Jesus Christ.
She wants to do that song, but her mother, it was like, her mother is also, like, nearly due a baby, and so that's another like time pressure thing that Charlie Day has to deal with. But she's like, no, you can't do that song. And so she's singing the song from Rent, you know, with all the, like, however many seconds are in a year.
Mm-hmm. What?
Five, I hate Rent.
25,000.
Yeah, she's doing that one, and then Charlie Day shows up, like, because he was meant to perform it with her, and then they were just like, no, let's go back on. Go back on. We'll do the Big Sean song. We'll do the like, you mean it? And she's like, this one goes out to you, Trisha, who's her bully. And she's like, I don't fuck with you.
Wow. I had a very funny experience the other day when I went to the movies for the first time since COVID.
I want to say too.
Yeah, Faust and I went to...
Hold on, what did you all go to see?
Elka, what did you see? You go first.
Faust and I saw Conjuring
3.
Okay.
Oh, damn.
The new one.
What did you see, Hannah?
I saw Another Round.
Oh, yeah. I saw A Quiet Place Part 2.
Yeah. I still have to watch Part 1.
That's so fitting that you three all saw a horror movie, and I was like, I wanted to watch the alcohol movie. Fuck.
We're all there, like, it's, you know, shaking at our seats, and Hannah's like, doo, 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 doo.
Hannah's like, what a life. I'm just gonna watch Mars dancing.
Oh my god, Mads Mikkelsen.
Elkin and I have a thing, because we've been going to the cinema so often since we became friends, like, 5 years ago. It's because Elkin and I both wear rings, and we always sit next to each other, and then we hold hands during the movie when it gets tense. So now whenever we go see a movie, it's like, when the advertisement starts, like, rings. Okay, let's take off all of our rings.
Otherwise, our hands will be bruised.
Yeah, like, legitimately, I don't remember which movie, I think it was, like, a Marvel movie, and it was super intense, and I had, like, indents in my fingers from Elka's rings.
Yeah.
We've learned lessons.
Might I be permitted to read my Letterboxd review of A Quiet Place Part 2?
Are there spoilers in it for Part 1?
No, there's no spoilers in it whatsoever.
Okay, cool. Then feel free.
A Quiet Place Part 2, 2020, directed John Krasinski. 4 stars. God, Cillian Murphy is so hot. I'm so lucky to be from the same country as him.
That's a solid review.
He has a beard in the film. It looks so good.
Killing just works anything.
I only know him from Peaky Blinders, so I only can ever imagine him in that aesthetic.
He's
I've seen him live.
Really?
Where?
Yes, in London, in a play called The Thing with Feathers. And then I got his autograph at the end, too.
Elka, I'm insanely jealous right now. I hope you know that.
Yes, this is the purpose of my statement.
Killian Murphy. Oops, sorry.
That's, no, I'm just trying to think. Like a Plath quote? Hope is the thing with feathers?
Yeah, it is, but it's also, it's a famous...
Emily Dickinson. That's what it is.
Yeah, it was a really good play. Really crazy.
Yeah.
All about, I think, he plays a man who lost his wife. He has a kid still, and it's... Yeah, it's not a fun play, but it was real good.
Sounds like Killian Murphy.
Yeah.
I had two things to say, and they both left my... No, I remember. First thing I was going to say is Killian Murphy in Inception is another one of my depressed white boys in good suits.
He's in Inception?
Yeah, he's the... You know the person they're trying to Inception? He's the one who's getting Inceptioned. He's also Scarecrow.
If you've seen the meme of Leonardo DiCaprio squinting at someone, that meme... He's squinting at Killian Murphy.
Cool. I've seen Inception like 10 years ago or whatever it came out, so I don't remember anything except like the dreams within dreams. Concept.
He's also the he's also Scarecrow in all the Batman movies.
Oh yeah, I do know that.
But the story I was telling when and with that brilliant transition, I think we're
I'm remembering now as well. I sent you a message where I was like I was like, I'll tell you what I did to my throat on air.
Oh god! Do you want to do it now? And this could be our intro story.
I think as well. It's really funny, just in terms of like how the human mind assigns blame and like superstition as well. Because when I was at work, right, and I was putting cardboard into this compactor, which you like, you know, you put the cardboard in and you close it and you press the button. And it just, like, crushes it into, like, a block that you can then put in the bin. And I was doing that, and then there was, like, I saw something moving on the ground. Mm-hmm. This is preamble to my throat. And I looked and I was like, what is this? And it was a spider, but it was really, really shiny.
Oh.
Like,
I
almost,
don't like this story.
No.
Almost metallic, right? And I was like, my brain was, first of all, like, huh, government listening drone. Cool. But I was like, damn, that's a really shiny spider. And I thought nothing more of it. And then I was going around just picking up boxes and stuff. And then I was picking up a mug and some paper that I had left behind. And all of a sudden, this like twinge of pain shot through like my left leg. And for the rest of the day, my entire lower body, like I could not move without being in pain. I couldn't like walk, stand, sit, etc. And I was like, oh, this is weird. It must have been that shiny spider.
Yeah, that's like my first thought.
Right? And then eventually, like, it got to, I finished work at like 5 and then I got out and I was like home and it was like maybe 8 o'clock and it had finally like stopped hurting altogether. And I was like, this is great. And then we were just having some munchies. I was on my laptop watching, I was listening to like a commentary on a really bad Stephen King adaptation. What one was? Oh yeah, The Dark Tower. And watching the film at the same time. And my family made munchies, and it was like chicken balls and kind of like salted chicken. And so I had just gotten over being in pain, and so then I was eating. I put the chicken ball into my mouth to eat it, and it was really hot. So I started ha cha cha in it about my mouth. And
Nigel, where's the story going?
I had to step back, or else I would have tripped over my new puppy, which would be bad. It went down my throat, and it lodged.
Oh my god!
In my throat, this hot chicken ball.
Oh my god!
And so then I had to try and hack it up like a cat with a hairball, and I just really fucked up the inside of my throat. And now today, I'm kind of like, this is a week now to the day, And I've basically just gotten... I've been taking, like, painkillers every 6 hours for a week, you know? And I was like, finally, I've gotten over this. And then I was lifting a box.
Did it again.
I was lifting a box in work, and you know when you get, like, a blister, and then, like, the top of the blister comes off?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened to my hand while I was lifting a box, and it's really sore now, and it's that goddamn shiny spider! I'm sorry, I'm going slowly insane.
Mm-hmm. Sounds.
Okay. I'm in a shed wearing a floral jacket.
I'm gone for a second. I'll be right back.
Okay, when, oh my.
I'm so sorry about that story.
It's fine. I'm just waiting for Elka to come back so we can introduce the show. Hello everybody, and welcome to the Archive Admirers, our bi-weekly podcast where we discuss all things of Magnus Archives. If you haven't listened to the show before, welcome. What we do here is that every 2 weeks we listen to an episode of Magnus, we come together as friends, we're going to talk about it, discuss what we like, what we dislike about the story, and then have a little bit of a spoiler chat afterwards, and you know, just get up to a lot of stupid goofs as we are doing it. As always, I'm joined with my three lovely co-hosts, Nigel.
Hello, I am in a shed.
Faust.
Hey, I am not in a shed.
And as always, the creature that likes to drip water on your head when it's not raining, but it might rain, and then you get like a random drop on your shoulder and you're like, oh, and then it just no more rain happens. Okay.
Hello. That really is a great activity.
It is. And as always, I am Hannah. Tired and fucking dying of hay fever. Holy shit.
I get off. So, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you get off. So I said hello. Oh, I am Hannah. As always, I'm fucking...
Oh, that's not good. Did it cut off for everybody, or was it just...
No, I heard Faust.
Yeah, I heard that, but...
I am back, I think. My Wi-Fi fucked up.
Yeah.
Hello, I am Hannah, and as always, I'm fucking...
As always, I'm fucking... Well, Faust is disconnected from the call. They're back. Faust is okay, back. I think
so, too.
That introduction was going so well.
yeah, we were doing real well.
Don't worry, sorry.
Just remember, folks, we are professionals. This is our full-time job.
If you sponsor us, I can buy better Wi-Fi. That is not true.
Get better equipment. Anyway,
have you ever wanted to build a website? Well, Squarespace.
Graphic design is my passion. Sorry, Hannah.
It's fine.
Hello, Fresh.
That's not the first time this has happened, where we've been like, it's gone really well, and then something's happened, and it's just like, now it's time for Sponsor Zone. But no, what episode we're talking about this week, friends, or not this week, you know what I mean.
This episode.
What episode is it? Is it episode 13? Alone?
Yes. 13. Yep.
13! Wahoo! We've been doing this for 26 weeks! That's a happy year. Everyone's gotten very quiet all of a sudden. Oh no.
I'm trying to do maths in my head.
I'm trying not to interrupt you.
No, it's alright. 13 by 2 is 26.
That is correct.
That's half a year.
You can count.
I do finance. No.
I had to message Hannah once recently, and I was like, hey Hannah, sorry if this is weird, but what's 19 plus 2?
21.
Was that what I... Something like that.
It was something like that. I was like, I just went... Blah, blah, blah.
Hannah is the one who knows the numbers.
Maths is hard.
But Nigel, what do you know how to do?
To summarize a statement from the Magnus Archives.
Hell yeah!
We're back on track with that epic segue. the queen of segues herself.
Recording for 20 minutes that we're at the summary. Fuck yeah.
Woohoo! Alright, are we ready to go?
Let's go.
Alright, so this is episode 13, Alone, which is Statement of Naomi Hearn regarding the events following the funeral of her fiancé, Evan Lucas. So basically, this is the first time when we sort of accept that Jonathan Sims isn't the only person that exists in the entire universe. There's officially one other person. Like, we haven't met any other people. He's just talked about them. So they could really just be... We could all be figments of Jonathan Sims' imagination. And that would be slightly terrifying. But anyway, this lady, Naomi, comes in and she wants to tell her story to the Magnus Archives. But she's really, like... You know, kind of snooty, being like, is that a tape recorder? That's, you know, she's really whatever, like, a Luddite is. She's the exact opposite of it. She's like, you know, that's a old clunky technology. What, that doesn't have a SIM card in it? But apparently they had tried to record it on like more modern technology and it didn't work, so they had to use this, and she's not happy about it. And John is just being equally sassy backwards, and she's like, you know, why don't you get better equipment? And he's like, I'm trying, because it seems even in the Magnus Archives, they're terrorized by, like, you know, the mundane things like Tories and underfunding. So they start off, and this is a story where she was going to get married to this guy called Evan Lucas. And she's like, this is a bit weird, and it's, you know, I could be grieving, but here's my story. And so she's like, you know, I wasn't really a big kind of socialite person. So she was always, like, on her own. Her father died when she was really young. And her mother was kind of, like, always away at work, you know, trying to support the family and whatever. And so she kind of just, like, coasted through school on her own, not really, like, being noticed by anyone. And so, like, when people are all, you know, moving into houses and stuff for university, she stays in her own, like, single room in university accommodation. And she's happy with that. You know, she doesn't really have friends, and she's, you know... She doesn't have friends. She's a loner. She's a weirdo. Have you ever seen her without this hat? That's weird.
God, fucking damn it.
I have recently had my arm twisted into rewatching Riverdale in the same way that you are twisting my arm into watching Succession, Hannah.
See, Succession's a good show. Hot take.
The person who is twisting my arm, Kat, would contend that Riverdale is a good show because it loops back around on itself on the quality scale.
We're gonna get off topic. Continue, please.
Yeah, so she's like, you know, she's not really bothered by people socializing, but sometimes she'd hear, like, laughter and she'd go, God, I wish that were me. But, she, you know, she's not really bothered by it. The only person who's really, like, kind of sussing the whole thing out is this dude called Pastor David, who's like, you know, people don't seem to exist, or, you know, aren't born to exist on their own. They need people. Like, you know, that whole no man is an island unto himself, every man a part of the continent, that kind of thing. And so she graduates, like Hannah, and then leaves, and she goes to get a job, and she's going in for the interview, and there's this dude in the waiting room for the interview at the same time as her, and she starts to talk to him, and she feels, like, you know, really at ease with him. She doesn't feel reticent or the need to clam up, and then he goes into the interview and she feels, is this loss? And I'm sorry. Oh, I'm in a strange mood. So she's sad that he's gone, and you know, they've only spoken for 10 minutes or whatever, but then she goes in, kind of fucks up her interview, and comes back out, and he's waiting for her there, and so they kind of like, you know, they get together and they're living together, and he has like a load of friends, and she kind of hangs out with them by proxy, so she's like, I have one of these social lives now.
Continue.
This whole episode is kind of like mood. I'll get into it when I'm done the summary, but yeah, this episode is just Magnus episode 13 mood. And so, like,
that's the title right there.
Yeah. They get you know, engaged and whatever after like 2 years, and then he dies of a congenital heart disease, which was, you know, like, it was always there, it was never picked up by any kind of scans, but now she's alone again, and she kind of feels distant from his friends, you know, like, she's like, oh, I could talk to them or whatever, but like, they were kind of his friends and not mine, and you know, that would be just awkward. Like, imagine that icebreaker, like, so Evan died, right? Not a great way to... A great way to freeze the ice after you when you leave, which is an important conversational tactic. To freeze it over after you leave, just so no one else takes advantage of the little icebergs you've created by breaking the ice. And so she... like, it's like a week later, and then they go to... she goes to his house, like his family house, for the funeral. And... she doesn't remember, like, getting the address, but she's there. And, like, Evan has never, like, really mentioned his family. He said he's kind of distant from them because they're very religious and he wasn't. And, like, she'd never met them, or, like, didn't even know their names. And so she goes to the house, and it's, like, this big old kind of manor or whatever, like, real gothic spooky house type vibes. And it's during a storm, and so she loses her hat. And, like, you know, they're it's quite obvious they're, like, fairly well off. They have their own mausoleum on grounds. And, like, really, that's the sort of the ultimate mark of whether you're wealthy or not. Whether you can afford to keep your own dead relatives at home instead of shipping them abroad. Or, like, you know, abroad from your house, whatever. And, yeah. Like, you know, she meets the family. She meets his father. And he's, you know... like, looks like Evan, but there's no joy in his face. He's all hard-faced and stony, and he says, like, my son is in there, he is dead, and, like, just goes away, you know, just like, you know, follow me if you want. And everyone in the house is kind of that weird cold distant thing. They all wear the, like, you know, they all have the same type of expression on their face. And they're all, she feels like they're judging her and whatever. And she feels guilty for him dying because, you know, there wasn't an awful lot she could do about it. And they go in, and it's like, he's in the funeral. He's in the funeral? No. What? He's in the coffin. Yeah. He's in the funeral box. Oh, brain. He's in the coffin, and he does not look like himself at all. He seems to be transformed into this different person, not the person she had fallen in love with. And so she, like, you know, stares at him for a while. And she thinks she's only been standing there for a little bit, but she turns around and there's, like, loads of people are there. And she's, you know, shocked and whatever. And then an old man comes in and says, like, it's time for you to leave. The burial is a family affair. I'm sure you want to be alone. And so she leaves. Like, they just stand there and wait. They're like, you know, in your own time, kind of, you know, we've got a funeral to get on with. And so she goes back out into the storm and gets into her car and starts driving. And she gets into a car crash. And after the car crash happens, her phone and the dashboard say that it's, like, you know, gone 11 o'clock, and she had showed up at the house at 6 o'clock, so she doesn't know where 5 hours of her life have just gone. And there's no service and all, you know, standard horror trope. And so she starts walking in the rain. And she just decides to turn right and start walking. Still nothing. She gets angry. You know, keeps walking. And she throws her phone onto the ground. And it kind of shatters and goes into the mud. And so, like, the rain stops. And then she's there at, like, this sort of foggy mausoleum, and the, like, there's a load of graves and trees and stuff, and it's all very, very spooky, and it's not, like, you know, the ground isn't wet, so it seems she's completely somewhere else. And she gets to this, you know, like, she gets to the center of this kind of graveyard area, and there's a chapel, and you know, there's stained glass and there's lights on inside and all this, the whole shebang. And she goes around looking for any sort of way in, and eventually she finds doors that are locked with a chain. And then she basically, like, how do I get in? Rock. And so she takes a bit off of a grave that's been broken, which is like, is that desecration?
It's a bit shitty.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I realize you're in a bad spot, but, like, have a bit of respect, you know? That's what's key. And so she breaks open the lock. And then as she turns around, like, all of the graves are open. Like, all around her, where before there were, you know, regular buried graves. And so she feels alone, even in this cemetery. Like, all of the dead people have just, you know, fucked off and left. And then the fog keeps getting heavier and heavier, and she looks into the chapel, and like, as she looks inside, there was, you know, a field there, which is not what you expect inside of a chapel in the middle of nowhere. It's a field stretching off forever and ever, and so she's like, oh, that's my one phobia, fields. And turns and hot foots it out. And as she's running, she hears the voice of her dead fiancé say, turn left, referencing one of the best episodes of Doctor Who in David Tennant's era. And then as she runs onto the road and gets hit by another car. And that's it. I don't know how that was.
I'm not going to lie. When I went turn left, I did go to the left. I'm awful.
I hope that was good.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
What y'all think?
Jesus, my brain is fucking... I feel like all of us are in a really strange mood tonight.
Yeah. You think?
Aren't we always in a...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like it's a very particular brand of weirdness that we don't usually have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, let's talk about the episode.
I'm so tired. It was a good episode. Yeah. I liked this was the first one where we had a different speaker.
I think it's also, correct me if I'm wrong, the first one where John actually records a statement and isn't just reading one that's already been recorded.
It's very present, like, very current. Yeah. The others are like really distant, they happened ages ago, we don't, you know, can't find much, but this is like, it happens, like, not that long ago, to me.
Yeah, it happened like a year ago. I don't know, maybe, again, we're all in a weird mood. I didn't, like, love this. Like, I think it's interesting, it's not my, like, I don't hate the episode, but I was kind of like, I listened to it today, I listened to it like an hour and a half before we sat down to record this, and I was like having to rewind because I was like disassociating listening to it.
That's kind of, I can't keep the information in my brain, which is why I like just kept being like, what am I saying when I was trying to summarize that, because it's like be dissociating time.
The episode has this weird, like, really mellow vibe.
Yeah. I think it's... Sorry.
No, go ahead first.
I think it's also because it takes really long to get into the actual story. Like, a whole lot of it is just her talking about how she's a loner, and then meeting Evan, and then, like, living together and all that. And it's only from when she gets into the Lucas house, that's when it starts getting interesting to me. But that takes, like, half the episode.
And, like, and, I found the whole stuff where she's, like, she's going to the house and, like, the family. I was like, oh, that's... Again, because it does take a while to get set up, but a lot of these, a lot of the Magna stories do take, like, a while. Like, normally the first kind of third of it is set up. And then when they got to the Lucas's house, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, something, like, weird and fucked up's gonna happen here. And then she, like... She just kind of, they're like, please leave. And she leaves, and then...
She just goes, oh, okay.
Okay.
Bye then.
I mean, wouldn't you? That place was weird. I would definitely leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think it's... For me, it might partly be because she is set up to be kind of disliked with the way she starts with, oh, you know, you guys are fake and you're working with the stupid... recorder, and they set her up to be kind of just a dislikable person, so that I'm already like, I don't care what she has to say. And then she keeps saying how she's a loner, and I'm like, sure, I get it, you're always on your own, fine, whatever. And that kind of, I don't know, keeps me not out of the story, but less interested than I'd usually be.
Yeah, like I think that that's an interesting detail. It feels like one of those stories where it's like the actual story itself has like nuggets of interesting horror stuff, and a lot of it is like kind of not surface level, but it's like, say 60% of it's kind of filler. There's like 20% good horror stuff, and then there's like 20% that's like giving a bit more kind of context to this world. Like I think that whole thing where it's kind of, you know, she's making kind of comments and she's like, oh, I went to another paranormal agency and they recommended you and stuff. It kind of gives more context to what, like, the position of the Magnus Archives in this world. And when he kind of dismisses her and she's just like, for fuck's sake, at the end, and, like, storms off. Which I thought was, I thought that was really interesting because it's like, people are obviously expecting something to come of giving their statements.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I enjoy this episode in, like, a lot more in my memory than re-listening to it, I guess, because it's, like, nothing really happened. You know what I mean?
But I feel like that's sort of part of it.
That's kind of, like, I realize that's kind of the point, because the whole point is, like, you know, she goes to a place and there's no one there and nothing there and all that kind of stuff, but like, I don't know, it feels like a real kind of, I don't want to say letdown, because it's not a letdown of an episode, it's just kind of like a really different, like, gear shift away from episode 12, which was like, not an awful lot happened in episode 12, but it felt more full.
Yeah,
you know, because it was like a lot of episode 12 was just like, oh, I'm waiting in this hospital, and oh, a guy got stabbed, you know, and he just burnt up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I feel like they chose, with the whole being alone thing, I feel like that's a really hard theme to get across in a podcast. Because if it's a movie, there's so much more visuals and with sounds.
You can
highlight that I'm alone, I'm so alone, where am I, what's going on, what's happening. But in, you know, purely with a told story, I think it's a really difficult thing to bring it as well.
Yeah,
I also, I mean, I really enjoy this episode as soon as the spooky part starts. Like when she gets to the Lucas Manor and then eventually leaves it, and she starts seeing freaky shit. I seriously love that part. I think it's one of my favorite episodes. It's just the lead up that takes a while and that interests me not as much as the rest.
Yeah. No, I've lost what I was going to say. Sorry.
No, it's all right. I think my thing with it is, when it's titled Alone, and when it kind of gets to, and like they really kind of do ham-fist the point of like, she's alone, and then the only person she had in her life was Evan, and then he dies really unexpectedly, and he's that kind of. I don't know, when I first started listening to it and it was like, she goes to the weird manor, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, we're gonna do like weird creepy house shit. Because I love weird creepy house, like, and creepy family shit. And then she leaves so quickly, and then it's like, she gets into a car accident and this weird fog comes in. And am I mistaken, or did she like go missing for a full 24 hours? Or is that me just putting in
details? I think she did go missing for a long time. Like
a solid half day.
Expect, yeah.
Yeah, because she says she was at the manor at 6, which I assume to be p.m.
Yeah.
And then when she wakes up after the car crash, it's like 11 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's say she stayed at the house for like an hour at most.
Yeah.
But still 4 hours to have lost.
Yeah. So is the... I'm just trying to see. I'm reading through this. Thingamaboop. The day... Whatever the day of the... Like, is the day of the funeral the 29th or the 30th?
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't say. That was just me being speculative of, like... I wonder if he looked at the dates. Is it, like, did she lose... a day, or did she lose just a few hours?
No, I think it's a few hours. It says in the post statement thing that she got in a car crash on the 31st. So that would be, I think, that final car crash at the end of her story, where she got back out of that strange, spooky place.
And she was there for 2 hours then.
I wrote down while I was listening to it. I noticed the way she talked was very distinct to me, and especially at some points when she's in the house, and she's been at Evan's body, and then she turns around and sees the rest of the family, and like the grandfather or whatever shows up.
Yeah.
And she describes him as his suit hanging off his body like sagging flaps of skin.
Yeah.
And that's like, first of all, who the fuck talks like that? Second of all, that's badass. What a description.
I was listening to it earlier too, and I thought it was really... I wonder why they made that decision, because she really talks like she's telling a horror story. I mean, if I was a person giving a statement, I probably wouldn't tell it as, like, with the intent as if I was, you know, trying to tell a horror story around the campfire.
Yeah.
There's so such different... you know, situations and connotations to how you tell the tale. I don't know why they did that here.
Part of it is, I mean, the fact that we're listening to a horror podcast, like a meta level, they probably wanted us to feel like we were listening to a story.
Yeah.
But I also think on a more character, on a personal level, that she... because she says she's told other investigators this.
Yeah, that's
and fair. She's been disbelieved before. So maybe she's telling it like that to seem more serious and to be believed more easily.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair bit of it.
That makes sense, but it does just really feel like she's reading from a script.
Yeah. I thought that as well.
Not in a bad way, because it's well produced and... Katie Davidson is, like, you know, she really sells the voice acting, like, talent.
Oh, yes.
But it feels like, you know, all the other ones, it's Jonathan Sims reading a statement that someone has written down. And this one feels like she's reading something that's written down. Like, it doesn't feel like any of these words are coming to her in the moment. Like, if you're trying to sell... if you're trying to sell someone on this is something that happened to me, and you're like, you're desperate enough to go to the Magnus Institute with their shitty little tape recorders, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to sell someone on that, you don't have time to put a flashlight under your chin.
Yeah, exactly. That's the feeling. Yeah, that's why I... That's the weird disconnect I had too. That's very well described.
Yeah, like... I think that's maybe why we had all of us kind of where we were listening to it and we were like, this feels weird, because they do kind of set it up at the start of this, like, this talking back dynamic, and then it's just like, as soon as he's kind of waiting for, he's like, you can start your statement, she just talks straight through for like 25 minutes, where I'm like, I think if you were actually giving a statement, I feel like the other person would interject, but maybe that's just, you know, to keep in the format.
I think you're on a good point there, and I feel like I may be misremembering, but I feel like in the other statements, even when John just reads them, the original statement makers sometimes went off on a tangent that wasn't super related, or was like a detail that didn't actually matter.
They get stuck more.
Yeah, well, she clearly has rehearsed this story.
Yeah. And maybe that's synonymous with her being very traumatized by this, and it's like, I has to relive it in a way of like, this is a story, and like, take herself out of it, so she doesn't get upset. Because the one time she does crack is when she's like, Evan died, I'm not going to tell you how, like, all that details, because I don't want to cry. Where it's kind of like, that feels
that's the
very
only good. Moment.
Yeah.
It also does, because she does say that she stole this story, like, I don't know, a bunch of times to everyone else. And nobody wants to listen. So at this point, I guess it would make sense that she's good at telling.
Yeah, she says she's desperate, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Is there anything else that anyone wants to comment on? I can. Yes, Nigel?
Oh, I wanted to say, it really... this is something that Nigel is reminded of. And maybe it's just because I feel like I have one every episode, because I'm now consuming so much horror content, where it's like, you know, watching horror TV shows and I'm listening to horror podcasts while I'm at work and that kind of thing. But it really reminds me of, if any of you have watched The Haunting of Bly Manor, you know, like the whole
I think Elk and I watched it together.
Yeah, we watched it together. Yeah. We watch a lot of the horror stuff.
Yeah.
The whole bit where, I can't remember what her name is, but Victoria Pedretti's character, like, you know, she gets married, and it's, you know, like, it's kind of quick or whatever, and they're together, and then he gets killed really suddenly, albeit it's because a car plows through him when he steps out of the car. Sorry.
That's alright.
We should put a warning at the start of this episode.
Luckily, I'm editing this. Spoiler alert, Hannah. I'm sorry. I thought you said you had seen it.
Nah, that's fine. I knew someone died in it. I just wasn't sure who.
This isn't a main character. This is just part of the backstory. Her husband is dead.
Yeah. I knew.
And
that.
So, yeah. And she just like she goes to the funeral and it feels all really weird and stilted and she's like the family is much more nice and welcoming to her, but the way the narrative works and the way her character is. Like created, she sort of makes herself feel like an outsider there, so that it just reminds me of that.
I can see that and like one thing we haven't touched on is the weird chapel mausoleum thing. Did anyone else just think that was their mausoleum in the back of their house, or am I reading into it too much?
I feel simultaneously like that's a super weird thing to have, like, your family mausoleum in your garden, but at the same time I was like, maybe that's just what really rich people do. I don't know.
No, that's
it seemed like something that like old aristocratic rich people would do. I didn't question it too much.
So there's a family mausoleum near where I live, not mine, obviously.
Not in your garden?
No, I'm
the
sort of
that
in
Nigel's
the...
in.
I was going to say, the closest thing we have to that is my podcast murder shed. But it's really, like, it's up on a hill, and there's an abbey down in the bottom of the valley, and then you go up this sloping hill, and there's, like, this old kind of abandoned church, and then you go further up the hill, and there's this family mausoleum, and it's got like gargoyles and shit on the outside corners. Yeah. And so we went in, it was like part of a tour, and you go in and there's like the steps that lead down to the crypt where all the bodies were, and there's like a bone on the altar because people like at one stage in history broke in to this mausoleum and like stole a bunch of the bone, and they got back or whatever, but like they had to seal them up with concrete to stop people from stealing the bones. And another really weird thing is, I'm not gonna say where this is because I don't want to like dox the area in near where I live, but there's a place, I suppose like if you really wanted to, there's 7 wonders in this one place, and one of them is that this is also in the chapter, or in this like mausoleum, there was a white martyr that lived there. And do any of you, just first of all, do any of you know what a white martyr is?
Is it like the ferret kind of creature?
No. A white martyr is a religious person who martyrs themselves but without spilling blood.
Oh, is it different? Yeah, I know what a martyr is.
I got confused
by the, because you said white martyr, I thought that's a weird specification, so it must be the animal. Because there's also like brown martyrs or whatever.
But she, so this dude like lived in this cell above like the altar kind of thing, and he lived there, and this is one of the wonders of this place. And like, he's kind of like, you know, lived an ascetic life up there, and he would like listen to mass and whatever, and all this kind of crack. But it was like, they're really fucking weird family mausoleums, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Someone's back. But like, that's a, you know, they wouldn't, I can't speak for England, but in Ireland they would never be in someone's back garden. I don't think they ever.
That's a thing as well, actually, just when you mention England. So, not to like plug my other. What?
Do not plug the podcast, right? Do not plug Hyperfixations here.
I'm trying not to, but I was talking to Niamh on it, and we were talking about death, and it's like, you know, here in Ireland we have the tradition of like three. I'm sorry, Hannah.
It's fine.
We have a tradition of like a body dies and within 3 days it's in the ground in a like cemetery plot. Like we have awake and all this. And where like she says it in here, and you saw it like when Prince Philip died and whatever, where you know, like a whole week will go by and then they'll do something. Like what are they doing with the body then?
Oh, they just kind of lay in waiting.
Yeah, I know.
I think it takes.
But
yeah, it doesn't. We don't do it in 3 days either.
No, we do. Like my grandmother died on a Wednesday and she was buried the Friday. Like it's, you know.
Yeah, it's.
Bury them quick here.
There's whole traditions and like. You know, the person who digs the grave, you have to go and bring them a bottle of whiskey.
It's
that's
like
a thing.
A family member will stay with the body kind of all times. That's an old tradition that doesn't really happen anymore. Like when my grandfather died, he like reposed, which is what they say, in like his bed until he got brought to the church, and then he got brought to the church to the family plot. So we're probably not the best representatives from burial customs in the British Isles, but listeners, if any of you have a family mausoleum, please let us know.
Oh yes,
we're recording if
it's in your garden.
Please let us know if it's in your garden.
Also,
can we
if you don't
in your
have
family
a
mausoleum,
also if you don't have a family mausoleum, but you do have dead people in your garden, also let us know.
Yeah. I'm sure Elka can get there fairly quick.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, like, I'd love to hear some more locations of family mausoleums or buried bodies, you know, always interesting.
To get slightly back on track, when she... when...
What are you talking about? This is what people signed up for.
Yeah, absolutely. When Naomi describes the chapel at the very end, and, like, the doors open, and she sees... I don't remember what she sees. It's not what's supposed to be there.
Field.
She's like, oh, my immediate reaction was to turn around, and I was listening to the episode just now, and she described it, and my immediate reaction was like, I would have gone through it. I would have wanted to check it out.
You would have died. Real.
Oh, 100%. If I was a horror movie character, I would die within 5 minutes. Because I have no impulse control and no self-preservation. But yeah, I would have come through the portal.
Could we talk for a second about... I want to know what y'all's opinions are on, like, why there's a field inside of the mausoleum. Like, what's the reason? Because the whole thing is, like... The whole thing is, like, she's alone, and it's this whole, like, culture of death, like, is the framing thing with the funeral and whatever. And then just for some reason, there's a field that stretches on for forever inside of a mausoleum.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, you can go first.
No, you go first.
You go first, Faz.
Okay. My interpretation was that it had less to do with the death aspect and more with her feeling alone, right? Because the whole thing is about she always feels alone except when Evan came along, and then she felt alone again, and now she's in the cemetery surrounded by mist. And then, like, if I picture in my head just, like, this immense field with nothing, no markers of, like, where the hell it is, that's super lonely to me. Like, imagining just standing in the middle of a field with nothing around me.
Yeah,
I think the emphasis was more on being alone than the death thing.
Yeah.
But it
goes back to how difficult it is to portray being alone in a told story. Except for saying, I'm alone. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's... Oh, Hannah is muted. I hope she's okay.
Yeah, maybe
got someone good to talk to her.
Or a phone call or something.
Hello.
Are you okay, Hannah?
Yeah, no, I got called for dinner, so I was like, one sec.
Oh, I hope we don't keep you too long from sustenance.
It's okay.
I was just gonna say, that's like that big field, and it's very hard to convey that you're alone, but it's also like, that field that seems to stretch on forever is basically just literally anywhere in Ireland if you leave the city. I don't know whether you've ever left the city, Hannah.
My mom's from Donegal.
I wonder if everyone who wrote and worked on this podcast, if they were all like city people. Maybe they're just not used. Because even if you've been, you know, to the countryside or whatever, I think it's still different growing up in a city.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
going to somewhere really isolated. Then growing up somewhere really isolated, I don't think it would feel that isolating than the image of the field.
My weird read of the field is whatever presence possesses the mausoleum.
Runs the mausoleum, like it's a KFC.
You know what I mean.
Buy a ticket.
Whatever, like, is conjuring it, is trying to tempt people to come in. And the field is a comforting thing to a lot of people, especially if this mausoleum is very old, because the Kent Downs are really, really, really rural. So if you're in a weird graveyard, and then you have the option of this, like, pleasant looking field with, like, moonlight,
yeah,
I think a lot of people would duck in.
There's something strangely alluring to standing all alone in the middle of, like, somewhere.
Yeah.
This reminds me of a theory I read, I think, on Tumblr, so, like, this probably isn't scientifically accurate, but it seemed logical to me, which is words aren't working. Between the United States and, like, European countries, there's a difference in which natural parts are super scary.
Yeah.
Because for us, it's like forests. And I think also, in my experience, fields being completely empty. That's something that's inherently scary in some sort of way. Mm-hmm. While in the United States and in North America, it's like cornfields is the thing that's really scary. Because that's just, you know, the thing that they don't really have all that forest like we do in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's super intriguing. So I wonder if the field in Alone in this episode was also meant to be kind of like that, like the inherently creepy thing that's also strangely alluring, like Elka said.
That's
a good.
Does anyone have other things before I like talk again? I feel like I've talked a lot.
No, go for it, Nigel.
I am going to move you on to the spoiler zone because we've actually talked a lot about this episode so far,
really?
Much more than I talked.
I just spoiler like that. I was listening to a podcast at work where it was the White Vault, where they were talking to David Ault, one of the voice actors on it, and he was, so like, you know, the people who created it who are on the call, they're from America, and he lives in like North Yorkshire, and they were talking about like what the difference is between cities and stuff, like in America, like the city that he's in, I can't remember which one it is, but it only has like 11,000 people, and they were like laughing at that because that, you know, in America that's like, you know, a mid-sized town, it wouldn't be a city.
Yeah.
But he was saying like even in the city that he's in, you just have to drive for like a couple minutes and you'll be out in like open green fields and nature and stuff. You don't really have that sprawl of suburbia, so it really is like, I don't know, an encroaching kind of. You see it here in Ireland too. Like we're not really as
like
industrialized, I guess. Like urban sprawl isn't as big a problem here.
Yeah, it definitely is in Belgium. We're very tiny.
Yeah.
And really?
Yeah, we're a very tiny country, and like there's almost no like wide open green space.
Yeah, I mean, I live in my mom's house, I live in the middle of nowhere, but it's like the nearest supermarket is a 10-minute drive by car.
Oh wow!
But I could still.
That's like urban by Irish standards.
Yeah. So it's the village I live in has literally just like one cafe and a church, and that's it. I think there's maybe 100 people here.
Yeah.
But the nearest village is maybe 20 minutes on foot, 50 minutes on foot. There's just no, like, supermarkets and stuff.
There's no distance between things here.
In Ireland, the equivalent to that is just, like, you know, it's a town if there's just a church and a pub.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's what constitutes a town here in Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weird vastness of, like, fields and stuff, that's not at all a thing in Belgium. There is no vastness. Like, every major city. You can get everywhere in the country with, like, a 2-hour train ride or something.
Yeah, like, I live in the very eastern part of Belgium. Like, the German border is maybe half an hour drive from where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And to get to the very western side, to get to the ocean, I have to drive like 2 hours by car, 2.5 maybe.
Belgium's tiny.
Yeah, we're super small. So everything's close together.
Yeah.
Ireland's also small, but we just have real bad infrastructure.
That came straight into my head when you like there, because you were like, my mom's from Donegal, and I was like, oh, they don't know what a train is there.
They had a train line, they just dug it up.
Yeah, like it's abandoned.
It's abandoned. It's nice. It's, you know, I got to go to the normal people beach the other last 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
What's a non-normal people beach?
No,
there's a TV show called Normal People. And I
don't start me on this path.
No. All right. Okay.
What we should start on.
Spoiler zone.
Spoiler zone. Yeah. You've been recording for an hour. Oh, fuck. Okay. For those of you who haven't tuned into the show before, congratulations on making it this far. What we do now is we have our little bit of a spoiler zone, where the other three who have listened to all of Magnus get together and they're going to talk about how this kind of fits into the overall context of the show. While I'll go pick out an actor who is going to feature in our adaptation of Magnus in our next segment after this called The Uncanny Valley. We'll see you then. Well, I will. They'll see you straight away. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Skip ahead to 1 hour, 8 minutes, and 25 seconds if you wish to avoid series spoilers.
Well, how are we all doing?
Tired.
Same.
Okay, so, like, the most obvious thing is Lucas family mention.
Yes. Is this the first time, or if they've been mentioned?
Yes. No, I think it's the first time, because I think the next one is with the bosun's whistle with the weird boat.
Yeah.
But I think this is
one after the other. They're mentioned one after the
No.
Bosun's call is, I don't know, that's like in the episode 30 something, right?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I don't remember the order of the episodes. But
episode 33.
No, you know when I think the Lucas family is already mentioned?
Hmm.
There is an episode where someone talks about, like, the families who support the Institute, who give the Institute money.
Yeah.
And then the Lucas family is mentioned, I think.
Yeah, they are already mentioned as, like, patrons.
Yeah, of the Institute.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah. That's the first appearance of Elias. Like, the
yes.
With his voice, where he comes in and is like, don't anger the Lucas family.
Mm. Yeah.
Because so Naomi files a complaint against John for being too dang sassy.
Oh boy.
All right, so that still has to come then.
Mm.
So this is legitimately the very first
time.
Yeah, I can't wait for Hannah to experience just the emotional roller coaster, which is Elias Bouchard.
Yes.
Yes. Also, Peter Lucas is my second favorite character on the entire show. After my crew.
Fair.
I'm very excited about the Lucas family mention. Because they're super cool and very creepy.
Yeah.
Do you think he's
in this episode? Sorry to...
I think he probably was in the house.
Yeah, but like, none of them really... None of the ones that they describe really fit in with, like, the description of what we know Peter Lucas to be, right?
No, I think Evan might have been, like, a cousin or a nephew or something like that, but he wasn't mentioned himself, I think.
Do you... Just did... Remind me, did Evan... He like ran away from his family, right? He didn't
love
them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to link into with... We know, obviously, that the Lucas family is devoted to the lonely. They're avatars of the lonely. And I noticed very clearly in this episode with the way she describes Evan, he is the polar opposite of what a Lucas is supposed to be.
Yeah.
He's very outgoing, he talks to random people, and Naomi is the one who would actually fit in a lot better with them.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, do we think he did it, like, on purpose or, like, subconsciously? How did this situation come about where he is part of this family who's devoted to the lonely, but is himself, like, really outgoing, but then he does end up with someone who is perfect for the lonely, you know? How much agency does this Evan person have? I think that's an interesting
thing
to think about.
But also, like, he never brings them up and stuff, but then when he dies, they're able to reclaim his body and stuff. And
then in death,
he's made into what a Lucas should be.
Yeah.
Well, I mean...
Because, like, Naomi nearly doesn't recognize him when he's in the coffin.
I mean, that might just be because he put the distance between them, but they probably wanted him in the family. So I feel like they're just reclaiming him. He couldn't get away fully.
Yeah.
And I think with what Elka said, do you know the weird thing that people say, like, daughters will always get together with men who remind them of their fathers? I think, I don't know if this is accurate, it sounds very weird to me. I think it might have been something like that.
Yeah, that could definitely be a theme that they're, like, alluding to. Like, he tried to escape his family, but then somehow ends up with, like, a similar...
Yeah. Can't get away from the lonely. Which is ironic. Actually,
ironic. Yeah. Just a bit.
Let's all just stop for a second to admire that irony.
Very well done, Jenny Sims.
I do... I think I like the image of the lonely as, like, space better than this. I liked what they did with the field and stuff, but I think space is the better metaphor.
Oh, you mean, like stars space?
Yes, like with that other episode, that future episode with that one astronaut who's, like, in an experiment and he's suddenly all alone out of
space. Okay.
That I think that's also because that's something that would genuinely terrify me, to be, like, alone in the vastness of space.
Yeah.
I think I very much like this interpretation of the lonely because it's very insidious in the way that it's, like, it creeps up on you, right?
Yes, yes.
So Naomi was already alone.
It's more seductive.
Yeah, she's already alone because of who she is as a person. So it's difficult to notice when it gets too much, when it gets dangerous lonely.
Yeah, like we have the creeping fog as like a tangible reminder of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have anything else that's like specifically spoiler worthy.
Yeah, I've written down one more thing. Hannah was like, "This is good. I feel like this is going to be a really long spoiler section because it's setting up stuff," and it's like. Not really.
Nah.
Well, it is. It's like a new fear, but there's not much to say about it except that it is a new fear. It's the beginning of something, but
Like in for us to discuss, there isn't all that there much except like they're lonely. But like
because cool. Like the only real thing that this episode connects onto is the fact that Naomi makes a complaint later on, because this isn't like we don't know Peter Lucas is here, so the next time that Lucas physically appears, it's Peter Lucas in Bosun's call, which is completely unrelated. So,
Oh, I just thought of one more thing that I think is really cool: the way she describes the Lucases when she's at their house. Makes them all seem very similar, just by the way they're dressed and the expressions on their face, which is an amazing way to make people feel lonely, to make them feel like they're not part of the crowd and entirely alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, if everyone is the same and looks like they belong, and you don't, and you're not where you're supposed to be, I bet you would feel super lonely.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about that's the last thing I had. I had one more remark, but that's for general talk.
All right. Do you think we should get Hannah back?
I think this is the shortest spoiler chat we've had so far.
Hannah's gonna be so confused.
Yeah. How did she know? How did you know that you were supposed to return, Hannah?
I saw Nigel was typing, so I was like, this can only mean one thing.
Oh, I forgot that showed up, because we were like, should we get Hannah to come back? And then you were like, I return?
You made a mistake, Hannah. You should have said something, like, about spooky powers.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I know I said it in the Discord before, but, like, it'd be, in keeping with this episode, like Hocus Pocus, but this is Spookus Lucas.
Spookus Lucas.
I don't know why I'm so exasperated today, but I just am. I don't know.
I hope you're not exasperated at us.
No. I'm just tired. Okay. So, I've had my casting for this episode planned for all of 30 minutes, but it came to me in a vision when you were doing the description. And so a little bit of context, I recently was staying with a cousin of mine who's 17, and she hadn't watched a lot of movies, so I was like giving her an education. So one of the movies I showed her, we had like a good like 3 hour three movies in a row binge. So we started off with The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes, good choice.
Oh, solid choice. Yeah,
I haven't seen that.
It's great. Faust, go watch it. It's a feminist masterpiece. And then we watched 10 Things I Hate About You because I was like, young Heath Ledger. And yes. She was like, but of course.
Another excellent choice.
And then I was like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, can't find him attractive anymore because he's a child in this movie. And she was like, I can. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to put a movie on for me now. So then we watched 500 Days of Summer because... Because Tom's awful, but man, I love Summer's outfits. So, you know. Yeah, Tom's awful. Does dress pretty great. Definitely the template, sorry to say. So, this leads up to, if any of you remember the ending of 500 Days of Summer, there's a great montage sequence, and then it ends with Tom going to a job interview. And he, like, meets a girl and makes a connection. So I propose for R1 that Lucas is Joseph Gordon-Levitt because he dies off-screen, as Tom should have. And I do not know the actress's name, so I will go find her name now. And I will plop it into the description. But I think that could be...
I feel like Tom should have died on screen. I feel like he should have been hit by a car or something. You know? He's one of the few movie characters where you're like, he's meant to be the protagonist, but it's like, no one in their right mind like roots for them. You know, like there's characters who are like the protagonists of their films. But you know they're bad characters, like Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men. You know he's bad, but like he's the protagonist of the film, and you go, okay, I can support this serial killer with a nail gun. Whereas Tom, from 500 Days of Summer, deserves everything painful that comes to him. I hope he sees a shiny spider.
The thing about Tom in 500 Days of Summer is that... and I would recommend anybody who's listening to this to rewatch it, because
rewatch all of the films that Hannah has just recommended.
Yeah,
I also haven't watched this one. No clue what you're talking about.
It's
that one's okay.
500 Days of Summer is this guy who has a really fucked up viewpoint of relationships because of trauma. Dates a girl because they have a load of things in common, and
they bond over the Smith.
Hey, I like the Smiths. You know, this is before Morrissey got cancelled, as he should have been. But it's a really interesting movie because, and like Joseph Gordon-Levitt has come out and been like, Tom's a bad person. You don't want to be like Tom. And it's just about two slightly broken people in a very toxic relationship, and no one's a good guy. But you know what? That soundtrack is, and Zooey Deschanel's suit, like outfits are, and it's. You know, it's got Coulson from the MCU before he's famous.
Oh, cool. Hey, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But also, you know what else is about two slightly broken people in a toxic relationship, Anna?
Succession?
God. I walked right into that one.
Jesus Christ.
Wait, which one were you trying to lead up to, Nigel? Yeah.
I've been hoisted by my own petard here. I was going to say Normal People, but no, I've been struck by Succession.
No, like, Normal People, 500 Days of Summer walked so normal people could run.
That's going to be the quote at the start of the episode, like at the start of the episode description.
Wait, do we have anything else, like, episode related?
We're in the closing minutes, baby.
Okay, cool.
But yeah,
this is a fun episode. If you've made it this far, good job.
Good job.
Yeah, I hope you keep listening, and this isn't the one you decide to quit us off.
Look, we did some solid discussion there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We did.
But episode discussion somewhere in this episode, I'm sure.
Everyone, let's go watch the montage from the end of 500 Days of Summer, because that song, it's Vagabond by Wolfmother. It's a good song. When you're listening to that song, you should go follow us on Twitter at Archive Admirers.
How does she keep doing these segues?
I thought you were going to say, like, when you're listening to that song, you should go fuck yourself.
you're clearly the more violent one.
And you should also send us an email at archiveadmirers@gmail.com. Haven't plugged the email in a while, I've realized, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah, especially send us an email if you have a mausoleum and or other dead bodies in your garden.
Yes.
Add pictures. I want pictures. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Shout out to a recent listener who reminded us to tweet out the cursed photo of my Discord when I got hijacked that one time, because we forgot to do that. So if we do forget to tweet out stuff, please let us know, because we record these like 3 months before we release, so we forget things.
You can also follow and message us on our Tumblr too, and this is where we shout out Tumblr, that's the one.
Yes.
I don't even know what the second one I said was. It's completely gone out of my memory now.
You said Discord.
Tumblr. Yeah, I said Discord and then something else. Who knows? Tumblr user Wiki, who messaged us. Correction on one of our episodes, and then showed us her wonderful embroidery.
Yes,
that was amazing.
That was very cool. What was the correction?
It was about Graham being the boyfriend of the guy from 11, because when we recorded it in the spoiler section, we were like, oh, you know, is it this dude? And we were like, we don't know. And then, so she messaged us, she messaged us, checked who ran the account so she didn't spoil it. But like by that time we had already recorded the episode on discussing 11. And that was around the time that Johnny released a Q&A where he officially was like, yeah, it's the same dude, but I just never did anything with it in the series.
Yeah.
But still, Wiki, who I've interacted with a lot, also on the Hello from the Hallowoods Discord server, I believe. Your embroidery rocks.
Yeah. Very cool.
It's very funny to me that this person has two separate, like, connections to horror shit. And just, I don't know, it's just very funny to me.
We gotta form those parasocial relationships. Wahoo!
Speaking of parasocial relationships, God, now everyone's doing segues.
My power grows, infects others. Nigel, plug your pluggables.
So you can find me on Twitter at SpicyNigel, where I've tweeted about this brand new suit jacket I've gotten, which is floral, and my plans to get a dress to go under it.
Nice.
Can find me on TikTok, where I posted a TikTok about astrology. So if you check the description of that, you can find out my sun, moon, and rising signs. And also, find me on AO3 under Spicy Nigel, where I have started posting fanfic.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
It's still podcast related, just not the Magnus Archives. Hoo boy.
You can find me on Acrily ComSci, where I am now a Trinity College graduate with the, and I wanted to tell you guys this, I'm like, a first class honors degree. Heyo!
Woo! Nice!
I got 80% of my thesis. Heyo!
Oh!
So, mental breakdowns are over. It's happy times now. We get
it's hot girl summer.
It's hot. What was it my friend said? It's hot girl scholar.
Yes.
So yes, I'm finished college now and a lot more happier. Funny that. So yes, you can go follow that tomfoolery. I tweeted out a meme about our college admin the other day, which is a killer whale with the label Trinity Admin punting a dolphin to death with will to live.
Yeah.
Klaus, what's your problem?
I didn't see that one, but oh my god, that's so accurate.
It's good. It's a good one. Klaus, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is underscore JOLLLL underscore. Every time I say my Twitter, I have to count. Fuck.
Get all the L's right. Forget the Y.
I love this. And the fact
I was so focused on counting the amount of L's, which is what I was going to say. I have to count on my fingers the amount of L's I say. So it's underscore JOLLLLY underscore. Like the Levi's character. What have I been tweeting about? I've been tweeting, I think, about LA by Night, because I've started watching it again. I've been tweeting about Critical Role, and I think also about Dungeons and Daddies, which is another great podcast. Yeah, I think that's about it. I started listening to another horror podcast, which is very good. It's called The Silt Versus. And it only has, like, 16 episodes so far, and if you like, world-building with new sorts of mythology, and with lots of body horror, like, lots of very detailed body horror, then you should check that out.
I've been meaning to check that out, actually.
And it's very good.
We should totally do a bonus episode where we just talk about our other favorite podcasts.
I listened to an episode of it while I was driving home from my boyfriend, which is about an hour drive, and it was like 11 p.m., so it was dark, and the highway was like pretty empty, and I fucking scared the shit out of myself. That was not a good decision. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
But yeah.
Faust, where are you currently? Or not Faust, sorry. Okay, where are you currently?
Where am I currently? Who knows, you know? I could be in your back garden, under your bed, or, you know, in that one closet where you keep all the stuff you don't really need but don't want to throw away either.
If you want any of that stuff, you can just take it, because I don't really need it anymore.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I think we're good. I think we're done.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, because I've been listening to other podcasts, if any of you are listening on Apple Podcasts, if you could rate us 5 stars, that's really helpful. Just to kind of algorithms and shit. Algorithms? Oh my god.
You graduated from a computer science degree and you've already forgotten the word algorithms.
Algorithm shit. And subscribe, and I hope you like. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Enjoy your Monday, guys.
Yeah, bye, listeners.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Watch 500 Days of Summer in succession. Hehe.